All right, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. So, maybe a quick video. Well, tonight, 6 minutes I got to play and talk, so yeah, maybe it won't be that quick, but it's kind of a simple idea of just arguing that, look, you know, these people who think physics is really rigorous science, that all the conclusions are all well evidenced and all of that, you know, you can sort of see that it really isn't. It's just a bunch of individual brains interpreting the data, and you know, they can have, you know, they can put various emphasis on certain pieces of data and say that's real, and then they draw a conclusion because they accept something as real, as proven. And they establish a premise for how they think the puzzle goes together. And so I would argue that this is sort of an example in the sense that there's a little bit of honesty here in terms of him talking about how this is a personal thing. It's not really science. Yeah. I mean, you know, we can't take our own slight biases or real biases, frankly, out of the biases in terms of overviews and pictures about how, well, you're going to have to really show me a lot of evidence for me to believe in a UFO or a god or some kind of crap like that, where other people will go for it a lot sooner. They need a lot less evidence. That kind of thing. Anyway, let's play the video.
To our lecture online, in this video, as part of the Can You Believe It series, we're going to explore what space is. And so this is our first of a number of videos in this series. And the reason why...
That's kind of funny, right? Just because, yeah, it's nothing. So the only thing that's interesting about space is the things that are in the space, I would argue. That space is, in fact, nothing. It can't do anything. There's just doing stuff inside the space. So obviously, if you... say there's a gravitational field, I would argue, well, it's being created by stuff in the space. It's not space itself that's causing the effect. And photons are a good example. I mean, nobody really believes that photons are space. You know, they think they're actual stuff moving through space.
Well, partially it's kind of selfish. I'm really, really interested in the concept of space and what it is.
And I guess the reason he's interested is because he is attributing all of these things, okay, bending, contracting, expanding, all of these effects that we measure as being effects that space is performing rather than effects that are being caused by the fact that there's stuff in the space that we don't see.
And I've been thinking about it for years, and I'm trying to put all my thoughts together into a single point where I can understand, at least partially understand, what space is.
Right. So, and again, the things he puts together are these statements by physics that I would argue were never proven to be functions of space, like a bent geodesic. The bent geodesic is made out of something. It's stuff doing something. It's not space doing something. The bending of light. Well, see, they know that stuff. Well, see, they don't know it because they think the light's bent by gravity when it's scattered by electrons.
Now, when we say space, we don't mean the universe. We mean, well, the space between everything else.
Well, we do sort of mean, okay, you can't really avoid the fact that it's the same stuff, the dimensionality. You know, the fact that there is a place for matter to exist. Placeness. Okay, so I mean, space has that quality of being a place where you can put something or have something.
The space between stars, the space between galaxies, the space where we think there's nothing.
Right. The space that's just empty, and you can put a chair and then you can sit in the chair. I mean, there's nothing there until something shows up.
Sometimes we call it the vacuum of space to indicate that there's nothing there. But I don't believe that's the case. I think...
So he's going to just make a personal argument. He's just adding up his little personal beliefs and saying, this is my conclusion. So, frankly, what's the difference between anybody saying, well, I don't really think they proved that Eddington thing, the bent light. I don't think they proved that. I mean, certainly didn't prove twice as much. And whether it's bent at all is an open question. And, the whole photon argument can be me wave-particle duality when it's clear the surfaces are causing the phenomenon. It's not really waves popping out of slits. It's really surfaces disrupting photons. So there's lots of evidence to indicate all of these little talking points about the fact that space has properties. They're just talking points. They're really not facts. Gravitational waves. We haven't heard too much from them, right? I mean, they have more and more of these seeing devices online, but they're not seeing the same thing anymore,
Space is something. As a matter of fact, we can say the fabric of space, because space has very specific properties, just like...
So again, the space doesn't have the properties. The universe has the properties. Okay, we look at the universe, it has these properties. It's doing stuff. And the question is, could it be that there's some invisible stuff, stuff we don't see, we don't see certain... We know there's infrared radiation. We can't see the infrared radiation. So we know it's out there, though. We know the ultraviolet's out there. We know these things are out there, and we don't see them. And we certainly don't see photons even going by. We can't see light go from one place to another. So there's lots of indication that our capacity to see is the real problem. We don't see stuff. We don't see a lot of stuff that could be in the universe. And the fact that we don't see it doesn't mean it's not there. And the irony, I would argue, is that we sort of do see it. Frankly, we're watching gravity, okay? We watch it, We see what it does. And, why isn't it just as rational to say there's something that's pushing that thing into the Earth rather than saying it just magically knows it's supposed to go into the Earth?
Fabric would have properties. And so by looking at each one of the properties, we may be able to figure out what space itself is.
So you just look at the events, and what are we trying to say? Are the events being caused by a mechanism that's elemental, some kind of pushing or pulling, right? And I would argue there's no elemental pull, so you're really just saying, what's pushing it? And I think those questions can be answered. I think there are answers that are perfectly reasonable that indicate it's just some thing you don't see.
Now, space is not a complete vacuum. For example, the dense...
So he's just arguing there's little tiny planets that we don't see. So that's really all he's saying here. Okay, so this density argument is interesting to an extent, right? You could say there's a trillion times more stuff between my two fingers here in the atmosphere than there is, out in space. Trillion times. So I put my fingers this far apart in space, and there's a trillion times less. It's a trillion trillion, but it doesn't really matter. Trillion trillion trillion. It's a lot less. But the fact is we know everything that travels through space isn't traveling this distance. So the odds of hitting something are much, much higher, because even though there's trillions of times less stuff, there's trillions of times more opportunity to hit it. So... that equation doesn't mean much. The density only matters in terms of you having to interact with it. A photon traveling a billion light years in space is having a huge number of permutations. So even though it's rolling dice that have, a trillion times fewer snake eyes on them, it's rolling them a trillion times more.
Density is about 0.1 to 1 atoms per cubic centimeter, depending upon which research team you listen to. But let's say it's 1 atom per cubic centimeter. Well, in the air here on the...
And then the atoms are all mostly the same thing. They're hydrogen atoms. So the atoms you're hitting are mostly the same atom. So that's another indication, that's another fact that's sort of important, where the atmosphere is full of a bunch of giant, you know, they're not single atoms. And besides not being single atoms that you're hitting, you know, giant molecules is what you're hitting, you know, all kinds of water droplets, all kinds of stuff in the atmosphere. So in space, you hit a very particular kind of monster.
On the surface of the Earth, in the atmosphere, we have 2.7 times 10 to the 19 atoms per cubic centimeter of air. So every cubic centimeter of air contains almost 10 to the 20th atoms. And so when you talk about one atom per cubic centimeter, well, that's virtually nothing, but it's still something.
So it'd be interesting to see a comparison to an apple. You know, what's the density of atoms in an apple? Because it's not just about the atoms, it's about what the atoms are. Again, big atoms versus little tiny atoms. So it doesn't really tell you anything until you start getting to a point where you're arguing about what kind of atoms you're interacting with. The atoms in the atmosphere are real tiny atoms mostly. I just pointed out how those are some big ones, but the point is that most of them are relatively small atoms because they're not even molecules. I mean, they're not even combined atoms. They're not compounded atoms.
So it's not like when we say the vacuum of space that it's completely devoid of material. There's still a little bit of material throughout space itself. And of course, we still have radiation going through space, and we still have...
So that's another question about what exactly the radiation is. Okay, so, you know, you don't really have electrons and protons moving through space. So that's a curious fact. They don't travel very well. But you do have helium nucleuses flying through space. So that's, to me, that's an interesting fact. Okay, because it sort of indicates that something drags electrons and protons, individual electrons and protons get dragged, okay, to a halt, where other arrangements of electrons and protons can survive the trip. They maintain their velocity.
All kinds of things floating through space, like neutrinos and things like that.
Well, so that's just made up. You know, that's like just saying, well, there could be gingerbread in space. Well, I don't think so. So until you have a rational theory for the existence of this neutrino-y thing, they only invented it because their math doesn't work. Okay, that's, neutrinos exist because they claim their math is right. And their math isn't getting the right answer, so they have to invent something that accounts for the little bit of leftover. They have some leftover energy. They have to create something that has it, so they call it a neutrino. But frankly, I'd say it's just error code.
If we ignore all that, what is space itself? Now, we can then say that space is something. It is not nothing.
So again, you can say it comfortably. I would argue that the elemental universe, the only universe there really is, right? The space, I can go out into outer space and there's space between me and everything else that looks pretty empty and I feel like, okay, I'm an electron. But that's what I'll feel like. I'm an electron. I'm something more elemental. And the elemental universe is simpler, not more complicated. There's not birds. There's no trees. There's no, you know, there's none of these complex features that we're so used to in the down there universe because they didn't have any chance to evolve. They have to evolve out. They can't evolve down. Okay, evolution doesn't go backwards. It goes, you know, one direction. So the elemental universe is going to be a simpler universe, and all of these features you're giving space are not simple features. The idea of things popping in and popping out of existence and all this, you know, come on. Mush.
And that is what we're trying to figure out, what space actually is. Now, here's an example of a beautiful picture of a galaxy. This galaxy...
Blah, 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 blah. These words should be avoided in science. This beautiful stuff.
See, it's what we call the Pinwheel Galaxy. It's Messier number 101. Notice it's beautiful. It has about a trillion stars, so it's like four times the number of stars that we have in our own galaxy.
So that sort of goes with just a circle. You know, you make a circle twice as big, it has 3.1 times more stuff in it, blah, 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 that kind of stuff.
This galaxy is roughly about twice the diameter of our own Milky Way galaxy, so it's an enormously big galaxy. But we're talking about...
Twice as big is not all that big, but whatever.
What's around it and what's between the stars?
Yeah, so the idea is that we're seeing clumps of big stuff that we already know a force is bouncing off of them. We already know, and they're emitting photons, so we know there's light bouncing off of it and there's light being emitted because it's hot. Okay, so the hot stuff is emitting photons and we see the photons. So we know that's what we're seeing, is energy hitting it and bouncing to us, or getting to us, being projected at us, okay, shot at us. So we already know there's stuff. So why can't we just say the same stuff is what's causing this pinwheel, it's causing the gravity? There's a pressure being imposed on the galaxy. The pressure is, you could argue it's collapsing or you could argue it's expanding. So that's another question that I don't think they have any great data to prove that which way the galaxy is going. Is the galaxy, as it's churning, is it being compressed or is it turning and it's throwing crap off? Is space more, is there more pressure in space or less pressure than 10 billion years ago? And I'd argue that that's really what the universe is doing. It's doing a yin-yang thing, okay, where the pressure, the force, gets trapped inside the galaxy as it, to make it smaller. And as it makes it bigger, then there's more force on the outside and it's going to push it smaller again. So the force just moves from being trapped by the matter. Then when it traps it, that means there's less pressure on the outside, so that means it goes back out again. As it goes back out again, it means there's more pressure on the outside, it contracts again. And that's, I think, a fair enough, has a chance of being the truth. All right, but they'll never say it. They'll never talk about some simple mechanism like that.
Space itself. So, space has specific properties.
And nope. The events taking place in space have routines and habits. Okay. But we don't know exactly what's causing the effects.
Let's talk about some of the properties in general to get a feel of why we want to talk about what space is. For example,
so again, these are, and all of these things can be explained as having other causes than space itself.
For example, light moves through space but at a specific speed. We call that the speed of light. We use
right, and it's the specific speed is a maximum speed. That is, we haven't found any other way to make light go any faster. So it's the speed it goes when it hits the fewest amount of stuff. So we take a small distance and we can measure it, and it only hit a couple, you know, the number of atoms it hits is way, way down. And so we get a speed number. Now, we can't do a test for a great deal of distance with any kind of accuracy. So, you know, who knows if it's the actual fact that all photons travel at that speed, even if they travel 4 billion light years. Maybe not.
The little letter C for that, and that's about 300,000 kilometers per second. Well, turns out that all electromagnetic radiation, be it radio waves, X-rays, gamma...
All forces. So all things, okay, that we... All things moving really, really fast move at that fast speed, have a maximum of that fast speed.
Rays, infrared rays... ultraviolet rays, you name it, they all travel through space at the speed of light. So there's something about space that controls the speed at which...
So that's an assumption, right? Because there's a maximum speed, that is a, you know, nothing's inhibiting. You're not dragging anything behind the car. And so it has a speed maximum to whatever it's the accelerator's at. Okay. So there's no reason to say the road is limiting, or this is limiting, or that's limiting. It's just saying that this is the maximum speed you can go in this universe. that's the fastest thing, and that's as fast as the fastest thing travels. Now, you could understand, sort of, that, you know, you'd end up creating some horrible paradoxes if you didn't have a maximum speed, because then things could happen instantaneously. I mean, on top of each other. Everything would happen at once. Yeah, that wouldn't be any good. There wouldn't be any reality then. So without this time limit, that's the reason why there's a universe, because things have to happen sequentially.
Electromagnetic radiation, which includes light, travel through space. We also have gravitational waves. In other words,
so again, you know, we already had plenty of other reasons to believe that gravity had a speed. So you don't need the gravitational wave theory crapola to believe. So, you know, just throwing that in because, yeah, I think eventually it'll be found out that the gravitational wave thing was pretty much a hoax.
It's when we make a disturbance in space, we have waves in space traveling in all directions.
Yeah, so it's not a disturbance, it's a conversion of matter into bent space, which is a theoretical pile of nothing, just made up by a couple of people who worked on gravitational waves. I mean, it's not an Einstein theory, it's nobody's theory. They just all of a sudden proposed this idea that, well, we need lots and lots of energy, so let's convert the mass of the sun into bent space. It's not a real force, you know, it doesn't affect other objects like real photons. So they had to make some kind of magical energy that just came to the Earth and jiggled it.
And they also travel at the speed of light. And just a few years ago, we were actually able to measure those.
So he said just a few years ago, we're actually able to measure. They're supposed to be measuring it now, but they're not finding much now, are they? Yeah. So the more tests there are of the actual performance of, I mean, the more instruments you make, all of a sudden the instruments aren't, nothing's happening. Yeah. Because now they have to correlate the data with some other test. So it's a more rigorous, experiment. And the more rigorous you make it, the less events are happening.
Those gravitational waves. If we place a mass in space, for example, a planet or a star or anything like that, it causes warping in space around it.
So again, that's his conclusion. He's accepted a model, okay? And the simpler explanation is when you have matter in space, the matter is moved by the force, and every time it moves, it consumes a little bit of the force's energy, because the force isn't going the speed of light anymore. So if a photon hits something, an electron or whatever, a piece of a photon, whole photon can't do this, but a piece of a photon can hit an electron, it moves the electron at a much slower speed, and so now the force has been diminished in its life of energy because it moved a bit slower for a little piece of distance, and therefore it lost a little bit of its energy. The energy is still in the universe in the sense the electron's moving, but it's not exactly the same thing.
And of course, when we jiggle around the planet, or when something explodes or something collides, that causes commotion within space, and that's where these gravitational waves travel outward from that enormous event.
Yeah. That's really not the story. Again, they had to create more than just common events, because common events of stuff moving around won't travel billions of light years. It just won't happen. So you have to do something to make it more, many times more energy. So what they've done is, you know, say solar masses, that is a mass equivalent to what it takes to, you know, the sun burning for, a billion years worth of energy was released all at once.
Well, we can also say that light changes direction in space, because whenever we place a mass in space.
So this doesn't work either. This is the Eddington experiment, never redone. really not proven. The images of gravitational lensing from the galactic images are so mathematically messy that you can't take those too seriously. So there really isn't any evidence that light bends. It's scattered. There is evidence that if you shoot light through an atmosphere, you can make it go in all kinds of directions. The shortest path to you or the longest path to you. Yeah, you can make it do either one.
And light travels past it, it will actually change direction. It'll change according to that warping in space around it. So we have proof that it actually does that.
So we really don't have proof. It's really weak evidence. All of the experiments that aren't the Eddington style experiment, where you're actually looking at an image or watching an actual object, they're all potentially scatter experiments in the sense that they're all inside the corona of objects, inside the atmospheric part. The sun, they don't call it an atmosphere, but it has a gigantic atmosphere, an atmosphere that's bigger than its diameter. It's gigantically thick area of space that's full of pieces of the sun, you know, that got pushed out and that are migrating back into the sun. I mean, just a huge amount of charged particles.
We also have measured that time slows down in that world.
So again, you've measured clocks that don't work, okay, that function differently. That's what they've measured. For some reason, the atomic clock isn't counting the same amount of time. So any explanation that accounts for the fact that, well, who said atomic clocks can't be broken? I want to break an atomic clock. All I do is put a radioactive element next to it, and I've broken the clock. So, I mean, all you need to do is expose a radioactive element to more radiation, and it decays quicker, okay? It changes its time. So, I mean, it's not that hard to screw up an atomic clock. Now, you don't screw it up by dropping it in water. You don't screw it up in all the ways we know to break clocks. But it's still vulnerable to being broken.
Space. So whenever there's a strong gravitational field, like near the surface of the Earth.
So we know if you're near the surface of the Earth, you're likely jiggling in the gravity more substantially than you are if you're further away from the Earth. And maybe that jiggling, okay, changes the decay rate, slows down how often you decay.
Time is slower there than it is in other places in space. So time does not continue forward at the same rate.
So little pieces, isotopic atoms decay at a slower rate if you jiggle them. I could argue, why not? That could be true.
Anywhere in space, it differs depending upon where you are. And time also slows down when you travel through space. The faster you travel, the slower time will go forward.
Right, so sort of the jiggling argument again, right? So somehow velocity, you could tie velocity to the idea that somehow velocity, moving a radioactive element, changes its decay rate. It's not impossible to imagine
for the person or the thing traveling through space. And finally, space is expanding continuously, and with it pulls all the galaxies apart from us.
So again, this is, you know, another piece of stuff they say that they had. It's all just theory. They don't actually see anything expanding. It's all part of their model of what they've put in the model. And it doesn't need to be the truth at all.
One another, and we've been able to measure that. And
we really haven't. So they say they can say it, but they haven't. Haven't measured any extra distance between anything real. You know, the moon and the Earth or some other circumstance. Nothing real. And obviously, you know, I could argue that space is continuous for the atoms, the electrons. There's no difference between this space and outer space for them. Okay, it's all the same space. So if space is expanding out there, it has to expand inside also. So the idea of atoms getting bigger and bigger is kind of just silly.
Again, these are the kind of properties, the kind of things that happen with space that tell us that space is something. It's not nothing.
Okay, now it doesn't tell me that. It's all of those things are so weakly evidenced. You're just basically saying because... I don't know. No, I can't even come up with a good example. It's not like we found a bottle in space with writing on it, you know, and so we had good reason to believe there's UFOs because we found a bottle with writing on it. You know, I mean, it's not like they have that, even that kind of evidence. So it's hard to sit there and create a, you know, an argument to make it understood that, no, there could be another explanation. I mean, it's like getting, okay, you're on a desert island, you find a coconut, you know, washes ashore, and it has a Z written in it, okay? Like, it's got a burn mark that looks like a Z. Now, you know, it's, wow, you know, it's a geometric shape, it's pretty, how could, you know, but it's, you know, I could make an argument that if it came, you know, it bounced off of a volcanic island, all right, and all those R's, it just happens that one wave pushed it in, it got a little burn mark this way, and then it got a burn mark this way, and then it got a burn mark that way. So that can be called a coincidence. You know, it's no reason to be certain there's other people on other islands. It's not nearly enough evidence. And you'd argue if these properties actually did exist, they would be more manifest and more, you know, tangible. They'd be more easy to access.
And so that's what we're going to try to determine. We're going to put all these properties of space together. We're going to explore them, and we're going to try to come up with an answer.
So this guy knows that there's 400 times better resolution from space. He knows all this astronomy stuff. He knows there's 400 times better seeing from space. And the Eddington experiment was completely, you know, you had to do it, you know, with 400 times less, you know, more atmosphere, more clouds, more garbage was in the way of you seeing. 400 times more crap in your way. 400 times more water to swim. I mean, I don't know how to, you know, just a much, much more difficult task. And you need an eclipse. From space, you don't need an eclipse, and it's 400 times better seeing. And yet, we have no evidence that the experiment has ever been done from space. I mean, that piece of evidence should give you pause, and you say, well, you know, yeah, there's no way to explain that. You know, there's just no explanation. There's no reasonable explanation. We really should have that piece of data. I mean, your telescope is 400 times more powerful up there. 400 times, come on. And we have nothing. You could do the experiment literally. You could do it just as well as Eddington, with just as much precision, with a GoPro camera. And we have nothing.
That, at least in part, will explain what space is. If nothing else, we'll get a better understanding of those specific properties.
And the properties of the universe, right. So a better understanding that, you know, I would argue that, yeah, there's good reason to believe that it's a push universe and you're just looking for what pushes something. That all the energy is conserved, all the way back to Descartes, for mushy's sake. I mean, you're going all the way back. People figured this out, that there looks like the energy just moves from one object to another object to another object to another object. You know, it's just conserved. It's always, the movement is conserved. So all you're looking for, when something moves, you're just looking for, well, what pushed the thing before it? Where was that piece of energy before it was pushing this? And that's all you're looking for. So in the case of gravity, you're saying, well, I know the space push, okay, that came from all this crap in the universe, blah, 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 everything's getting hit by that. What's causing the change, and there's less push from out here, and there's less push coming out of the Earth? And then you could just say, well, the Earth is hot, okay, it's molten in the middle. You know, so, yeah, maybe to make the Earth molten in the middle is why you have gravity. Come on. Not a big reach.
They're absolutely amazing. They're essentially beyond belief. So, stay with...
I would say that's true. It's all beyond certainty, certainly way beyond even, I think, reasonable, frankly. The speculation is kind of mushy and wooey, and I have no good reason to believe.
With us, we will make additional videos on that particular topic, what space is.
Okay, so that ought to be at least a little bit interesting, because maybe he'll get around to this light bending thing, and maybe he'll talk about how they never repeated the Eddington experiment. The most famous Einstein credibility-giving experiment. The experiment that made Einstein's mush, a reality.
And hopefully at the end of that, we'll be able to at least in part explain what space is.
Okay, so you're not going to be able to do it from your starting position, which is a bunch of unevidenced axioms. So I'd say you're in big trouble. But whatever.
Can you believe it?
Blah, 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 blah. I can't. Nope. So, this is his retirement fund. So, yeah. Look, he does a lot of work, makes a lot of videos. He certainly can't know all this stuff off the top of his head, so he probably has to do a bit of research himself before he makes these videos. Very, very generous, very nice, great stuff in that sense. But yeah, I would argue that the underlying theory is crap. Okay, so the acceptance of the underlying axioms is a big problem. The unproven axioms of physics. The 400 little fake particles that you can't put anywhere. They have no rational home. They can't exist in the model except as an outcome. They can't exist as part of the cause and effect cycles of the universe. But anyway, Euclidic. So, till the next time and such. This has been draftphysics.com, debatephysics.com also, but I cannot find anybody interested in that interaction. Where I say they've never redone the Eddington experiment, and they say something like, oh yeah, they did, an amateur did it, and... with star charts and, Yes, it'd be a good debate. But ain't happening. Unfortunately. So, it'd be nice if you could engage these people, in a back and forth. They make their argument, I make the counter argument, and they counter my counter argument. That kind of thing. Be really nice, but nobody's signing up to do the yang to my yin. Unfortunately.